On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. We are covering ground with our lieutenant governor today. We'll touch down on legislative priorities before lawmakers head back to their districts and his work on the governor's task force on climate change. So what questions do you have for the lieutenant governor after his first year in office? What do you want to know? What issues do you think the state should be working to address? You have a line, 800-642-1234. Mandela Barnes is the lieutenant governor of Wisconsin and a former state representative from Milwaukee. Lieutenant Governor Barnes, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me back.
Well, let's start with MLK Day. You were born in 1986. That was the first year that MLK Day was celebrated, and that was 18 years after his assassination. Looking back on your own experiences, your own career, what did MLK and the civil rights movement mean to you personally?
Well, it means a lot to me personally. I mean, I obviously would not have made it to this position if it were not for the fight of so many others in generations before me, people who put so much on the line in cases like Martin Luther King, their own lives. And also just the inspiration. You think about the challenges that we do face today. They are very significant challenges, and it shows how much further we still have to go. And many times it can be easy for us to get frustrated, get downtrodden. But the resistance to change is not as apparent. It's not as brutal as it was at that point in time. It's different. It's more systemic. It's more surgical. But at the same time, it gives us hope to think about it. They could have overcome so much during the civil rights era. If Dr. Martin Luther King and so many others could have paved the way to drive the change across the entire United States, then we can do it too, and we have to. We have a we have an obligation to do so, to create that great society. We are, you know, getting better, and I always, you know, say that we are mid stride in this march towards justice and this march towards equity. And it's not one that's ever done either. It's not like you get to a certain place and you put everything up and say, all right, our job is done. You wipe your hands and go away. You keep progressing. You keep moving forward. And that's always my message to the youth as well.
Change is more surgical today. What do you mean by that?
Well, you look at the barriers that are more systemic, right? You look at while people aren't getting hosed, people aren't having, you know, dogs sicked on them. There isn't legally enforced segregation, but there are other barriers that exist that limit opportunities for so many people. You think about the way schools are funded, and if lower income neighborhoods aren't able to fund their schools at the same amount as higher income school districts, it creates a disparity. And even in our criminal justice system, while there's no law that explicitly states that African Americans will go to jail while their white counterparts won't, the data is there that suggests that there is something very deeply ingrained within the criminal justice system that we all have to work to resolve.
As a leader in state government, you could be seen yourself as a role model to many young people of color today. Do you think about that? Does that weigh on you?
I do think about that, and it does weigh on me. Every time I show up to a school, I think about how that could have been me sitting in that chair, and how my life is not much different than most of the students that I talk to. Growing up, the experiences that I had, the schools that I attended, neighborhoods that I lived in. And I want to be a reminder, because this wasn't something that was on my mind. It's not something that's on the minds of many children. However, there weren't even really many examples when I was growing up, and there still aren't a lot of it. There still aren't, you know, an overwhelming amount of examples, but there are more and more. And if I can be that for some student that is trying to find their way, some student that's growing up in circumstances that may otherwise inhibit their full potential, and I can remind them that there is so much more for you to aspire to, then I'm all for it. And I think that's many times what students need, and also what we expect of our children. I think that is another thing that we should take into consideration. It's not what the examples that they see, but how we perceive what their ability is. And for us to go and say, hey, you know, we expect great things from you because great things are possible. And if you show up on the other hand and say you just expect some abstract thing, then kids are going to be lost.
We're talking about Martin Luther King Jr. Day with Wisconsin's Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes is with us. What issues in state politics do you think MLK would be talking about today? What do you think are Wisconsin's most pressing civil rights issues? How do you approach this day? Are you going to any events? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in a call now. Mary Kay is joining us from Kenosha this morning. Hi, Mary Kay.
Good morning, everyone. Mr. Barnes, I'd like to address income segregation. And what I'd like to talk about is we have WIDA housing that needs fixing up. People pay thousands of dollars a year to live in housing, and they're all concentrated in certain areas. And the apartments need to be fixed, okay? The second one is people need a car to go to work. If you don't have a car to go to work anymore, you don't even have a job because they want you on demand. So we need some kind of low-income loans. The jail loans don't work because they're too high for families to afford. That's a state loan. So we need some cars for a cash for clunkers program, and we need some cars, you know, loans that are low income.
Mary Kay, thanks for the call. So she's specifically looking at housing and also looking at transportation. Mm-hmm. Lieutenant Governor?
Yeah, housing is very important, and that's why, you know, I'm confident in leader that we have over at WIDA now.
And that's the Wisconsin Economic Development Association.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. Go
sorry
ahead.
Mm-hmm. And the new executive director over at WIDA, he is from Milwaukee, someone who understands a lot of the same concerns that you just shared. And it's important for us to think about how income segregation just leads to overall segregation. And the report just showed that we are the most segregated state in the nation. And also, we have the most stark lines when it comes to income between blacks and whites who live in the state of Wisconsin. So this is an issue of vital importance because we can't move forward as a state, we can't move forward as a society with this sort of disparity. When this kind of dichotomy exists between residents who, you know, live within the same borders, it's going to pose a more significant problem, and it leads to other issues. And when it gets as bad as it gets, when you look down from generation to generation to generation, it's where we get to deal with the other problems that we have. And that's why, you know, schools get underfunded. And ultimately, what can work to lead to our balloon prison population. All these things work together. None of these things exist in a bubble. And that's what I try to get people to understand, whether it's income or there's housing. And on the issue of cars, you know, I am a strong proponent of expanding mass transportation, right? I think that we should move towards regional transit models to make it more efficient so that people can be connected to jobs, people can be connected to other activities, leisure, and recreation as well. I think we are very far behind as a state when it comes to mass transportation.
Well, that also means funding the transportation budget in order to get that mass transportation that you're talking about.
We absolutely need funding. That's why I consistently call on our lawmakers on the other side of the aisle to address public transportation for the priority that it is. If we can't, you know, be a state of the 21st century with the level of public transportation that we have. You look west to Minnesota, their public transportation is much better. You look to the south in Illinois, public transportation is a lot better than it is here, and the options are far greater. And that was a move. I mean, you can even look back at 2010 in December when Governor Walker rejected the high-speed rail money, which I cannot tell you how much I appreciate the Derail podcast. I just give a quick plug to the listeners if you haven't.
Thank you for
Derail,
that plug. And Lieutenant Governor, we need to pause right there. You have a line, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment. More State Cap right here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Programming note here, join us Wednesday evening at 7 for live coverage of Governor Evers' State of the State Address. Our coverage will be hosted by WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson and PBS Wisconsin's Frederica Freiberg. Governor Evers will highlight priorities for 2020 before a joint session of the legislature in the state capitol building. And State Senator Roger Roth will give the Republican response following the address. That's Wednesday evening at 7 right here on the Ideas Network. Right now, we're talking with Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, looking back at his first year in office, looking ahead at his priorities for this year. Your questions in the mix. After last year's state budget, what are your biggest priorities for state government? What issues should the Evers administration prioritize? Join in 800-642-1234. You can tweet us, WPR Mornings. And Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes stays with us. Let's go back to the phones now. Thomas is joining us from Madison this morning. Hi, Thomas.
Good morning, Lieutenant Governor Barnes. I want you to know, first and foremost, I voted for you and for Governor Evers, and I am a state employee. But there was some controversy during the campaign as to whether or not you had actually earned your bachelor's degree. I want to know, have you completed that? And if not, what are your plans for completing it? Because claiming that it's been done and completing it are two different things. And the public has a right to know.
Thomas, thanks. Lieutenant Governor.
Yeah, there was no erroneous claim. Even the university put out the statement that talked about what happened with it. It's been an error on, it's more so a mutual error, actually. Teacher retired, and the chair of the department actually passed away unexpectedly. So we ran into more issues than we were supposed to, and it's just paperwork thing that we have to get together, still working with the school to resolve that. And that's something that too was blown out of proportion. I'm the one that brought that up. I'm the one that mentioned it. I'm the one that came forward with that information. But that is not an issue. I actually had more credits than I needed to graduate. It's just a little small thing.
A little small thing, a paperwork issue. I think Thomas wants to know a timeline for when this will be resolved.
Yeah, I'm just waiting on the university now for us to get everything squared away. And honestly, I guess, you know, over the last 11, now 12 years, it was something that after I left school, I ended up getting a job and didn't think too much about it and kept working. And we'll get that sorted out with the school, hopefully sooner than later by this year.
Well, let's take another call.
This semester.
Okay, thank you. Let's take another call now. Tina in Spencer is joining us. Hi, Tina.
Good morning. I am calling, and I just turned the radio on, and I happened to catch the end of this gentleman that was talking about how these people do not have cars, so they can't work because they don't have a car. It's an excuse. I have a nephew that's 40-some years old that drove 2 miles on his bike. Now, this is Wisconsin, even in the winter, to his job for many years because he didn't have a car. So don't use that as an excuse. And another thing that I'm seeing, I worked at the biggest retailer there is with food, groceries, and other things, and I would see these people come in with food share stamps, and they would spend $400 because they have a family, and the woman would have her boyfriend with her, and they'd spend their $400 on junk.
So Tina is saying there is too much public assistance being offered. Lieutenant Governor.
Yeah, I mean, so with the car situation, like there are people who, you know, may have to go a little bit further than 2 miles. I think that is something that we shouldn't just write off because we do know examples of people who were able to get through it and figure out and persist and find a way, because those people do exist. But it's difficult for us to assume that's the case for everyone. Not everyone has the same physical ability to even be able to ride a bike 2 miles if that were the option. So I think that even aside from cars, because I still push the conversation towards that exposing the need for us to expand mass transportation options, and I think that's the camp that I rest firmly in. And when it comes to food stamps and when it comes to junk, I mean, that's a debate that we've had for a really long time, a debate that I participated in the state assembly when they tried to limit the types of food that people are able to eat. And fresh food is not always available, not always an option. And when people are hungry, sometimes you're going to pick the most satisfying option, the most filling option, not necessarily the most nutrition, because the most nutritious food, doesn't have the amount of calories to keep a person going for a full day, for a full week. So I think these are all considerations that we have to make. Would I love to see people eat more healthy? Of course, but even more so, I would love to see more healthy options available to people.
We're talking about state politics with the Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. Still time for you, 800-642-1234. Lieutenant Governor, over the next several weeks, the legislature will be really busy wrapping up the law writing work for the session. And then there's this long break for election season. What are some of your top priorities before lawmakers head back to their districts?
Yeah, my priorities, well, one is going to be the same, and that's addressing climate change and working with the Climate Change Task Force. We hope to wrap up our work in August, at the end of August, and making sure that we get a full and complete count in the census is going to be vitally important. And third, I would say making sure that people are able to exercise their right to vote, pushing back on voter suppression efforts as they are happening all across our state, most notably and most explicitly with this attempt to remove over 200,000 people from the voter rolls. The goal is to create chaos, even if people are still able to register to vote. If they can hinder, if they can inconvenience somebody in any sort of way that will make them not want to vote or just not deal with it, then their job is done. And we have to make sure that that job is not done.
Well, let's take number one on your list, climate change. You chair a state task force that is aimed at reducing the effects in Wisconsin, and your first meeting was last month. You have, as you mentioned, a deadline to submit policy recommendations by August. Where do you hope for the group to focus its attention in the coming months?
We got a lot of things to think about and consider. You know, obvious expansion of renewable energy in this state. I think the goal for us to get to that the plan for us to get to that 2050 goal lies in so many people who were in that room. And that means that we have to reduce our reliance on fossil fuels. It also means that we should be able to give consumers more freedom. We have to look into issues and options like, you know, third-party solar, which would go a long way. We have to look at how do we get our agriculture and farming community more integrated into our plan, into our work. You look across the country where there's, you know, biodigestion, methane capture, carbon capture in general. And it's going to take private sector and public sector to make this work. And in our instance in the state where we had 8 years of no movement on increasing our renewable energy option, a lot of businesses made the smart choice because it worked for them. It worked for their bottom line. It was more efficient. They understand that people want to spend their money with environmentally conscious businesses and retailers. So they've already made the move. In many instances, their path is much more clear than ours is right now. And I don't even say this often, but this is where we can learn a lesson from them. And that's why we have a lot of members on the task force representing the business community as well. That means that we also have to think about the youth voices. That's why we have youth who are being more adamant than ever, and I think have given real life to this issue in a way that we hadn't seen before, the same way when it comes to ending gun violence. And we have to be cognizant of what our choices make that determine their future. This also means that we can look at how, unfortunately, we've lost so many family farms over the last several years, and what are some ways that we can help them stay afloat? And I think we've seen examples where, you know, wind energy has been very helpful, or solar arrays on farms that can help, you know, offset a lot of the losses that our farmers are facing. We have to think outside of the box. We have to think in ways that we have not had to think before. We have to challenge ourselves in new ways, because the crisis is more apparent than ever at this moment. I think that we also have to work double time. You know, at the Madrid UN Climate Conference talks, nations like the United States, the UK, China, they may scale down commitments. They didn't go as far that they could have gone.
I want to jump in here in the last seconds we have. During this year's election season, the census will also conduct its once-in-a-decade population survey, and the final tally could affect our representation in Congress or federal funding. What steps is Wisconsin taking to ensure its population is counted accurately?
Yeah, it will affect both, and Governor's going to have his census, his complete count committee. I know that there is a huge push in areas all across the state, and people should also know that there are employment opportunities available to them. As another quick plug, come work for the census. This is a great opportunity and really solid pay in certain areas across the state. But we are doing everything we can to make sure that all our people are counted. We're doing everything we can, especially in communities that have a reason to sort of be distrustful of what the process may be. Our immigrant communities should understand that, you know, we are here to work with them, not against them, and this is not going to be seen as some sort of trap. And
Lieutenant Governor, thank you for joining us. We're out of time.
Oh, all right. Thank you.
Mandela Barnes is Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin. Coming up, the State Capitol Report continues. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.